get direct access to all our video and audio files.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Up next, The Struggle with Alyssa.
Radio is hiring a full-time volunteer coordinator. We're excited to find someone to manage KBOO's volunteer program and be responsible for the day-to-day coordination of volunteers as well as their training. For a full job description and instructions for applying, go to kboo.fm/volunteer-hire-2019. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, for more information, go to kboo.fm/volunteer-hire-2019.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of That's No Lady, That's Darcelle, produced by Triangle Productions. The play runs from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall in Portland. Walter Cole owned the first Portland coffee bar, then bought an old beer and wine tavern. He began a drag act that, in 1974, became Darcelle 15. This musical tells the life story of Walter, Darcelle, and more. Again, that's Triangle Productions, That's No Lady, That's Darcelle, from September 19th through October 5th at Portland State University's Lincoln Performance Hall, located at 1620 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
My message to the young people of the world is that right now we are facing an existential crisis. The climate and ecological crisis, and it will have a massive impact on our lives in the future, but also now, especially in vulnerable communities. And I think that we should wake up, and we should also try to wake the adults up, because they are the ones who, their generation is the ones who are mostly responsible for this crisis, and we need to hold them accountable. We need to hold the people in power accountable for what they have been doing to us and future generations and other living species on Earth. And we need to get angry and understand what is at stake, and then we need to transform that anger into action and to stand together united and just never give up.
That's 16-year-old Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg in her first extended broadcast interview here in the United States. She'll be protesting in front of the White House on Friday, then taking part in the global climate strike on Friday, September 20th, here in New York. On Monday, September 23rd, she'll address the UN General Assembly at the UN Climate Action Summit, and she'll be at the UN Climate Summit in Santiago, Chile in December. Democracy Now! Will be there as well, covering all of these events.
Hello, everyone. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. That was the last few minutes from an episode of Democracy Now! This week, we played Democracy Now! On KBOO twice a day, every weekday. So please tune in and stay up to date on what is happening in the world. So I am in studio with Olivia Pace.
Hey, everybody. I'm back.
And Kayla Briggs.
Hi, everyone.
Kayla is the co-chair of the labor working group in the Portland DSA and is going to be coming in with some points about eco-socialism and more specifically how the labor movement should be relating to the emerging environmental movement. So the last few minutes of the episode from this week when Greta Thunberg was a guest on the show, and that's Greta Thunberg. If you are Swedish. And
she doesn't care how you say it, though.
She doesn't care.
She doesn't really care at all.
No, she's too young to care.
She has other problems, like making sure her carbon footprint is as small as possible.
She did not fly here.
No, she does not fly.
A sailboat, or not a sailboat.
No, like it was a sailboat.
Was it a sailboat?
It was an emissions-free sailboat.
Oh, not like a speedboat? Like there was no motor?
Really?
I don't think so. It was
she did not have sails up.
She wrote on the sails.
Okay, well, you know what?
I don't know how boats work, so when I hear that, like, it means nothing to me. But, like,
I mean, maybe it was electric, but I know that it was zero emissions.
It was zero emissions, and on the sails, it said, "Unite behind the science."
She's not going to be traveling by plane when she goes to Santiago, Chile, either.
No, she hasn't traveled by plane in 4 years, she said.
So she's going to be going through the border, and hopefully she will have her people make sure that the people who are at the border that are being terrorized by the United States of America will be centered.
Our country.
So there will be hopefully some, you know, some intersectional analysis.
Yeah, maybe she'll bring that into her analysis. She's very young.
She's already said some important things about environmental racism that were asked during that interview, but people should listen to that. They can go into the archives on kbu.fm or on democracynow.org and just Google just search
for Greta Thunberg.
Spelled GRETATHUNBERG. So she's going to be participating in the climate strike on September 20th. She'll be in New York City.
Yeah, she will.
And cities across the world are going to be participating on the same day, and Portland is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we had on Sophia from No SROs PDX, No School Resource Officers, fighting against Portland public schools having contracts with the Portland police and having Portland police inside of their public schools. So she was affected by that and helped to lead the fight against it, which will hopefully be able to be retaken up during this school year. And we at Cable will be able to support those youth on September 20th. She will be there along with a lot of her friends. Mm-hmm. And so all of my listeners, if you are an adult, please consider supporting young people in your life when they go to the youth-led climate strike. And that'll be on the steps of City Hall at 10:30 on September 20th. So that's in 1 week, and we at KBOO will see you all out there. We'll be broadcasting live. So if you can't make it to City Hall at 10:30, tune into KBOO for some live broadcast and then hopefully some analysis that some of the youth that are going to be participating will be able to come into the studio and talk about what they experienced after it was over.
Oh, I'm so excited.
So this movement is going to be led rightfully by the people who are most affected by climate change, children and people who have much more at stake in the future because they're just going to be alive longer, we hope.
I mean, at this rate, I mean, I'm supposed to be one of those younger people and I ain't going to live that long. I got cystic fibrosis.
Oh, yeah. If you can just talk about cystic fibrosis to the listening audience, because the last few weeks I know people are noticing that I'm not pressing the cough button. We have a cough button in studio where
I will not press the cough button. Absolutely not. What a wonderful transition. I have cystic fibrosis. It's a chronic terminal lung and pancreas disease. I'm finna die. It's from this stuff. Like every time there's been forest fires in the last few years, my lungs get all messed up. The quality of the air is seriously degrading my health, and I cough almost all the time. So if you hear me cough, we're not going to cough it out. We're not going to press the button. You can deal with it. But yeah, we talk about the timeline that we're on for how long people can survive on this planet. There's a
there's a layer of people that includes myself who are being seriously affected and are going, and like it's shortening their lifespan as we speak, not necessarily in these kind of farther off ways that we talk about. Like our living conditions are being degraded, but there are people whose quality of life is being degraded very presently.
Just this week on September 11th, the kid, I think he's 11 or 12, 13
yes.
years old. He's
oh from my Honduras. Goodness. Yeah, one of the
Sanchez. Mm-hmm. He has cystic fibrosis, mm-hmm. and he said that if he gets deported, it's going to kill him because you do your treatment every day. Mm-hmm. He has to do something similar.
Yeah.
Can you just talk about just what he's talking about when he says if he doesn't get his cystic fibrosis treatment, he'll die if he's deported?
Well, what I believe that he's referring to is that there just is not the level of care in places that don't have access to comprehensive up-to-date medical technology, advancements in cystic fibrosis that have allowed people to live pretty normal lives, or at least longer lives, are new, like all come in the latter half of the 20th century. And it's very important to make sure that you're staying up to date with like what with current medications and current technologies to like to make sure that you're taking care of your lungs. And yeah, things change at a really fast pace, and the lifespan of cystic fibrosis is always moving. It's really important to have access to that care. And so when I heard was that if he were to be deported, he'd probably be going to a place where there is not that like comprehensive care, and where he doesn't have access, and where maybe he isn't able to receive the thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars worth of medication that you use when you have cystic fibrosis. Like, I am like speeding to get a job that has comprehensive insurance, because like if I went 2 months without insurance, I would either be in crippling like irreversible debt or be dead, because the medication that you take is like you need it every single day, multiple times a day. You do 2 to 4 lung treatments a day. You take many, many pills every single time you eat. And all kinds of other different complications. There's like complications where like your nasal passageways get clogged with mucus, and there's, because what the thing about cystic fibrosis, I'm not describing it, is that your organs are essentially clogged with mucus, and so you can't breathe and you can't digest food. And like, I can't breathe through my nose. I can't, like, I'm in pain almost every time I eat, unless I take like 6 pills every time I eat. And even then, like, my like digestive tract is like disintegrating. And so, when I heard that, it hit home. Yeah. Like, it's a disease where advancements have come. Advancements that have allowed people to live past like 25 have only come recently. And the United States is like the wealthiest country in the world. There's lots of like technological innovation in this country. And that's why people think that, and there's lots of other kinds of innovation and advancements in this country. And that's why people think that we're so free, but it's being hoarded by very few people. And so we have the illusion of advancement because there is access to it here, but we don't share it with people in our country or anybody else in the world. And don't even share it with people who have been previously granted the privilege to have access to certain kinds of medical treatment, since they're seeking asylum here. The president's taking that away.
And the Supreme Court just mandated that he can.
Mm-hmm. So an 11-year-old child is going to die. I mean, if he gets deported, he is going to die. Like, the most people who have it are in much worse condition than I am.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's just about maintaining a very intense level of treatment. I've gone a week without medications where I became sick and was hospitalized like 2 months later. And that's not even like that intense. Like, most people who have it are in the hospital every few months to every few weeks. And it requires a level of care to live.
In Honduras, if he is sent back,
mm-hmm.
he is saying that he will die.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that not just that I hope Greta Thunberg mm-hmm. says when she's at the border or while she travels mm-hmm. through the United Snakes of America, but I hope she is able to bring this up and shed more light, as well as in the primary debates that are happening and, mm-hmm. and there'll be more of them. I hope that the question of environmental racism mm-hmm. and climate refugees mm-hmm. gets brought to the floor, because it is going to require an amnesty plan mm-hmm. that, and this is in my opinion, of course, mm-hmm. but people, assuming you want to make sure people are not dying of preventable illnesses, mm-hmm. then we will need to have a plan for making sure that if you are sick, and if your country has been so destabilized by the United States mm-hmm. of America, as Honduras has been, rest in peace, Berta Cáceres, mm-hmm. the Lenca indigenous woman peasant leader who was killed mm-hmm. by right-wing thugs in Honduras for speaking out against environmental racism, particularly dam projects. Mm-hmm. And looking at the former president Zelaya, who was ousted in a coup, who was a progressive president that had aims for bringing the kind of care mm-hmm. that this teenage kid mm-hmm. needs in order to survive, being able to bring it to Honduras and people who live there that have cystic fibrosis mm-hmm. will have a chance at life. That's mm-hmm. that's done now
yeah.
with the political formation that's there. And people who are from there, not just like him, but, you know, I'm thinking about Roxana Hernandez, the trans woman who was HIV positive and a sex worker who tried mm-hmm. to leave Honduras, was killed by mm-hmm. ICE. She told them that she was experiencing complications with her HIV mm-hmm. and they let her die. And shout out to my comrades in Familia, Queer Trans Liberation Movement, who've been fighting around the Justice for Roxana campaign. But she's not the first, she will not be the last mm-hmm. Trans woman that's going to be killed in detention, because surprise, surprise, the people who run the detention camps, many of them are really sadistic mm-hmm. and relish in the idea of killing a trans Latina in custody.
I mean, it's the kind of person you need to hire to do the job correctly.
A lot of the guards who people should follow the story in The Guardian. A lot of the guards who are responsible for watching over children, we're finding now, are child predators, sexual predators. So that's the level of care that people are getting while they're seeking asylum. And to give people one more thing to shudder at, now we know that a teenage boy who has cystic fibrosis, the same condition as your lovely co-host, Olivia Pace.
Hello.
So just like we all love and cherish you and your analysis in this town, and now your contribution to the show, people need to be able to receive the medical care that they need, and you shouldn't be phased out by race and nation. That's preposterous.
Well, not to mention that cystic fibrosis is a illness, an illness that comes from colonization. Brown people are not supposed to have cystic fibrosis. It is a white illness. Like, I am an anomaly in having, like, Black people do not get it. Somewhere along the line, something got mixed up.
You have a mixed race family.
In the stuff. And so, yeah, this child from Honduras should not have cystic fibrosis. That's not, it is a white illness. So the legacy of that, and now we're preventing the countries that these people are from having access to the things they need through our own greed and our own desire to make sure that other countries can't.
From diseases that were brought to yeah. them by the people who colonized them yeah. and are oppressing them.
Yeah, it's wow. pretty interesting.
I wasn't aware that cystic fibrosis was a white
It's disease. Really, really rare. Mm. And yeah, it comes out of like Northern Europe, like primarily like people of like Spanish and Portuguese descent. Mm-hmm. My mom's side is very Spanish and Portuguese, but my dad's side is not white. But yeah, it was like developed. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how science works. I was like, a resistance to cholera.
Of course you know how science works. I know how put yourself down.
Oh my God. I was like, a resistance to cholera in Northern Europe, and then it was brought over here at some point. And here we are,
Wow.
Children dying.
So, Kayla, I want you to be able to come in on the point that matters here. The news that I have for people is that at the same time that we will all be at City Hall to support the youth climate strike that's at 10:30 at Portland City Hall on September 20th, we're going to be supporting youth that are going to be striking. The news came out that the city of Portland at TriMet, they're already coordinating to make sure that the buses, the service is going to be picked up in areas that go past public schools, because they know that kids are going to be taking the bus, not going to school, to make sure that they can make a clear way to City Hall, that it will be safe. So congratulations to the city for making a smart safety decision for protesters, because that's not what we typically experience.
Or the children.
We're very, very happy that we're going to be welcoming new people into the struggle. Youth that have not engaged yet, but now actually get to come and take a leadership role in the formation of this new climate justice movement as it exists in Portland. So I'm saying that to say that at the same time, the Green New Deal motion is going to be brought at the Oregon AFL-CIO convention by our comrade, my mentor, KBOO veteran, Jamie Partridge.
Jamie!
The AFLC, the American Federation of Labor, and the Congress of Industrial Organizations, the umbrella organization that most unions and most of our local unions in town affiliate to, and they'll be sending representatives to the convention, and that'll be happening at the same time on September 20th. So while we are representing on the streets and in front of City Hall, some of our union brothers and sisters, siblings, shout out to y'all, are going to be at the statewide union summit with the AFL to hopefully win an endorsement for the Green New Deal.
Yeah, I hope so.
So we've got this interesting balance between the people who've already been carrying a lot of the environmentalist movement with groups like the DSA, of which you are a leader in the labor working group, but now we're bringing in new blood with all of these young people that are coming in. What does an eco-socialist like yourself have to say to the younger people who are coming into the struggle around this issue?
I think that labor has a really important part to play in the struggle to get the Green New Deal. I know that when we talk about big labor unions like the AFL-CIO, they haven't necessarily always fallen on the side that we'd want for progressive politics. I know that earlier this year, some leaders in the AFL-CIO spoke out against the Green New Deal, for instance. Some people in labor think that things like this aren't going to be good for maintaining jobs that historically are involved in energy, like coal and oil. And so we have to, as people who are in unions or fighting for union fights, have to make sure that our voices are heard and that we have a say in whether our unions support these kinds of really revolutionary and important fights and topics that we're talking about.
So I just want to be able to pull that out a little bit more, the tension that exists in this question of, do we fight for jobs in extractive industries, or do we fight for our capacity to be able to keep living on the planet? And it's one that is still pretty tenuous, and there's not enough agreement on. But how do we chart a path forward that can bring everyone into unity on this question, or can we?
I think that, if we can fight to make our unions more democratic and have our union leaders at the top listen to the workers at the bottom who they are representing, and we can have good analysis about how, you know, if we don't fight climate change and make these big changes in our economic systems, then we won't survive the crisis. And it might seem like in the short run we'll lose jobs, but we can work with our unions to help support trainings for people in industries that are in dirty energy right now, so that they can transition into clean energy jobs. And we can fight to make sure that people can maintain their health care if they lose their jobs, so that they can access, like, as pollution is filling our air and it's getting harder and harder for people with illnesses to live, we can support each other that way. I really see unions as the way that as working class people, we can stand together and really have a voice and make ourselves heard and make those in power make drastic changes.
So the question of capitalism has to be brought to the floor then, because if the way that workers are able to make wages at all is mm-hmm. through the capitalist system itself, mm-hmm. and we fight for more democracy at the workplace and for fair working conditions and wages, but if the capitalist system itself is being challenged by all of these new rascally socialists who are joining the movement, then what does that have to say about the future of jobs in this country and hopefully for the world embracing these ideas? Like,
What does it have to say for the jobs? Like, how can labor...
Yeah, well, there has to be something else put forward. So if capitalists are the ones who are in charge of the companies that people are working for, or for the institutions that people are working for,
yeah.
Well, then what do socialists say about how they would envision a just system that puts people and planet over profit? Like, what does that even look like?
Right. Well, you know, capitalists are making their money through the work that workers are doing, and they can't make their money without workers participating in that system. So if workers stand together and say, we won't help you do this anymore, like, for instance, by going on strike, they can have the power to demand that the end result of their work, the profits that are made, go towards things that will better everybody and not just the people who own the companies at the top.
So I just want to say a shout out to a friend of the show who I interviewed a couple of months ago around this. He's from the eco-socialist in DSA, Nick Caleb, mm-hmm. who is helping to lead the campaign at Jordan Cove. And we're all waiting for updates on that so that we know how to mobilize. But the fight at Jordan Cove is about a new extraction site that will be in Oregon, mm-hmm. that people are worried about the climate implications of new extraction. And there's local fights that are outlined in the Oregon Green New Deal, which also friends of the show, Paige Kreisman, came on and spoke about as she runs for office and is championing the Oregon Green New Deal, which is in opposition to Jordan Cove and other new extraction. But this is not going to be an easy fight. And I want some of the young people, if any of you are listening now and you're thinking about going on September 20th to the strike, to the youth climate strike at City Hall at 10:30 on September 20th, as part of an international day of action for the youth climate strike, well, please keep your eyes on this fight against Jordan Cove and for the Oregon Green New Deal more broadly, because if the mobilization on September 20th does not result in a solid campaign, well, then the energy probably will be sort of drained mm-hmm. from you, and your goal may not be met. So I want to sort of like have that be a word to the wise, as there are all of these people who are newly coming into the struggle that may feel disheartened if the demands that they're bringing forward on the day of the strike are not met. Mm-hmm. That means that it's the beginning of your work and not the end of it, because it's yeah. not like they're going to hear you and say, okay, well, let's work on implementing these changes. Then they're going to fight you at every step of the way.
I think we should also say that when the climate strike on the 20th, it's at 10:30 at City Hall, but it's going to be a march after that down to the waterfront, and there will be all kinds of organizations there and people who you can talk to get plugged in and figure out what people are doing and which projects really excite you and how you want to get involved. It'll be going all day.
There is an outline of the day at 350pdx.org. 350pdx.org is the sort of bottom lining organization that's helping to lead the other people in coalition. So if people want a rundown of the day, it will be a full day. 10:30 is just the rally point where we'll all be getting started, but we'll be marching across one of the bridges and making our way across town to go near OMSI, where I think a lot of people are going to be performing and and talking about some of their experiences with the work. And we will have, at the end of the day, hopefully many, many more people who are ready to fight for climate justice, and many more young people in particular. So again, shout out to another friend of the show, Sophia from NoSRO's PDX, who is going to be there, and she's going to be talking about the importance of following indigenous people in particular. She's from the Pomo tribe and was raised on the reservation in California. And it's important to be able to always connect this to the legacy of colonization, because indigenous people are not all dead. Many of them still are with us and
are suffering the results
very deeply, because one of the reasons that she left her reservation was because of problems that she was having with her health. Because the air, water, soil quality that reservations get are often some of the most polluted spots in the country. So I want people to be able to just tease that out, that when we talk about the legacy of colonization, not just in Oregon, but you know, in the rest of the country too, that it's not that we're saying that if you're not indigenous then you're a terrible person, which is of course how this thing always gets spun by the right, where they'll say, you know, oh, that this movement is racist and they want white people to feel sorry for being white. But of course it's not your fault, but it is your legacy, and it's the air you breathe, it's the country you live in, it's the culture in which we're all operating. It's under a white supremacist framework, and indigenous people represent the clear path forward.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, it's not an acceptable response to climate degradation to not, like we said before, acknowledge that there are people who are currently suffering the results of capitalist exploitation and careless degradation of the earth. Like, it's not something that we're not we're not all experiencing this the same way. And if you actually care about this issue, then you do need to particularly attend to indigenous people and other marginalized people who are experiencing the brunt of this in a way that's more acute than you are, and have less access to ways to evade the effects of climate degradation.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Also acknowledge that if you aren't seeing the results of climate change right now or having negative impact on your life, other people are, and that means you're probably benefiting from their suffering. And so anything you can do to stand up and help to alleviate that is necessary.
Remember that if it's not you now, it will be you next. Something that I think that people forget pretty often. I think just people generally, just on the whole, in terms of the very broad political left, have not come to terms with how deeply capitalism and like the need to end capitalism is tied to where we're at in terms of climate degradation. Like this whole trend around like single use plastic, and this like very staunch turn that I see a lot of people taking to individualistic methods of fighting climate degradation. When I see that, it just tells me like, oh, people are not connecting what's happening to the fact that like the same companies that like are exploiting workers and like are degrading say like sacred indigenous lands and are like empowering police forces to kill black and brown people, like all of those same forces that are throwing their money in all of these horrible directions are responsible for the bulk by a lot of climate degradation, and then the same fights that we're in right now is the same fight that we're going to need to take up to fight climate degradation. And mm-hmm. like you actually do need to be in like involved in the struggle to fight that in a meaningful way.
Mm-hmm.
And it will not just be like you
not using a straw,
single use plastic yeah. to feel good about yourself.
Yeah, the class dimension is very strong.
Yeah,
with people who advocate for a strictly sort of personal responsibility, almost like a bootstrap mentality, mm-hmm. but for the ecology.
Well, if you really care, then why don't you just?
Yeah,
because we live in a world that is built that we live in a capitalist economic system, and they have built this world on forcing people into consuming things in certain ways, yeah. and on like exploiting workers, on not paying the working class enough to be able to invest in those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That's and that, yeah, kind of middle class and upper class mentality is actually mm-hmm. very removed from the reality yeah. of how any of this is happening.
I want to say shout out to also friends of the show, Street Roots. Sisters of the Road Street Cafe. That's Street Roots newspaper, Sisters mm-hmm. of the Road Cafe, and Right to Dream 2, the self-managed homeless encampment. Mm-hmm. And I bring this up because the class dimension that I talked about earlier, where there's almost like a snootiness that is felt by people who are poor
mm-hmm.
because more well-to-do people mm-hmm. are investing in their homes being more energy efficient, mm-hmm. making sure that they, all of their recycling is on point, that they're mm-hmm. using products that are certified by this or that eco certification, mm-hmm. and that ethos is usually paired with also get these homeless people away from me
mm-hmm.
because they're dirty and I'm clean. Mm-hmm. And look at how much trash they're leaving behind. And mm-hmm. of course, never realizing that there are no trash cans around mm-hmm. for them to dispose of whatever it is yeah. that they are using. So I want to bring it back to this question mm-hmm. because it can't just be,
mm-hmm.
are you doing your recycling or are you phasing out using straws? That's mm-hmm. that's fine. I go to the bottle drop.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody comes over my house, no, please don't put your cans and your bottles mm-hmm. in with the trash. I'm going to take mm-hmm. them up to Delta Park and turn mm-hmm. them in for 10 cents each.
Mm-hmm.
But if that's not a reality for people who are living hand to mouth
mm-hmm.
and are struggling to just survive, this is not a feasible way of life. And ignoring that reality really obfuscates this idea of like, well, if we all just pitch in and do our part,
mm-hmm.
there are not enough cans and bottles in the world that will take the place of having to confront capital
mm-hmm.
and to fight extractive industries. Mm-hmm. And I think that both are great. But to ignore mm-hmm. one is a mistake, mm-hmm. especially when the ignoring one requires a sort of superiority
mm-hmm.
that is also often like a middle class notion mm-hmm. of just like being better, being cleaner, being more green mm-hmm. is like right in that realm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
City Hall, 10:30, September 20th, Youth Climate Strike.
Mm-hmm.
Please, if you are an adult that wants to support youth in your life around this, offer them a ride, offer them some snacks, ask them what they need to feel safe on the day, and encourage them to participate and fight for their future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking about what you had just said about the notion. I feel like there's an when I first came into organizing, I noticed an aversion that a lot of, I guess, organizers that belong to more marginalized communities, at least where we live, had, maybe don't have anymore, but had two organizing around climate change and the world ending, and kind of labeled it as being a white issue. And I think that that does come from how this is, how it's been co-opted by the ruling class, and like how, like, and the like trends and culture that's been built around like being green in Portland and being environmentally friendly, which is very unfortunate, because those who are most marginalized in our communities are bearing the brunt, like we said before. It's why we have youth primarily now leading this struggle. Something we talked about a few weeks ago that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough is that like children are like marginalized people. Children are people who are stripped of their human rights, and whenever something bad is happening in terms of capitalist oppression, like, children are bearing the brunt of it, not just because they're younger and are going to be experiencing things as they get worse, but because they don't actually have basic human rights, like, legally, in most countries, there's very few countries where children actually legally don't have human rights, and the U.S. is one of them. Like, have no control over their lives, and crimes against children are seen as much more permissible. And so all of these things that we talk about always fall on children highly disproportionately, including climate change, because the way that that marginalized people experience this, it's a lack of control over your life, mm-hmm. over your quality of life, over your body, mm-hmm. over where you can live. And so it's very important that we listen to the children who are leading this struggle.
Yeah. I'm interested in seeing what happens in Newark, New Jersey, because another story that came out this mm-hmm. week was yeah. particularly about the lead levels in the water in Newark, New Jersey. And a teacher from Newark was mm-hmm. Being interviewed. This is also on Democracy Now! Democracy mm-hmm. Now! Played every weekday, twice a day on cable radio. Check your listings and tune in. They were talking specifically about the levels approaching what was being experienced in Flint. So Newark, New Jersey, like Flint, Michigan, is also a previously heavily industrialized city where there were a lot of jobs that were available that gave people a decent standard of living, black mm-hmm. people a decent standard of living, that because of urban rebellions, that people were fighting against racism in police, in housing, in schools, that the igniting of social movements meant that a lot of these people were being punished for their activism and their organizing, and they became like sacrifice cities mm-hmm. that were rendered into such terrible economic deprivation. So a lot of the same problems that were pervasive in Flint, Michigan are mirrored in mm-hmm. Newark, New Jersey. And I want people to just be able to know that this is not just an issue for people in other parts mm-hmm. of the world, but for right here in the land of the free and the home of the brave, mm-hmm. Flint, Michigan still doesn't have clean water, and Newark, New Jersey is about to descend mm-hmm. into a similar situation because of lead in their water as well. Mm-hmm. And that the kind of strike action that is being started by youth-led climate mm-hmm. strikes is going to be exactly what's going to be required to remedy this, because as we see, Flint can be without water for years, and there's no meaningful response to fix it.
Well, it's profitable. Nestle's making tons of money on mm-hmm. the fact that people in Flint can't drink out of their faucets. So why would that change unless people who are being affected and have any kind of sense of morality stand up and change it?
Well, I think people did an excellent job. I want to give a shout out to anybody who supported the organizing or participated in any of the actions in and around and for Flint. and the water crisis that was imposed on them. It wasn't, the people didn't do anything wrong. Mm-hmm. It was a decision that was made by people in power to be able to save on the cost of getting water to people's taps in Michigan. So it was changing a source from a clean source to a filthy one that corroded the pipes and gave people lead poisoning. And something similar is happening in Newark. The levels are too high. Newark also, for the record, has one of the highest levels of childhood asthma because of all of the trucks that go in and out of the port of Newark. A lot of the trucks that do not meet efficiency and exhaust rules and regulations in other ports in the country can still go back and forth from the port of Newark to wherever it is that they are delivering to, and the children of Newark are suffering specifically because as their lungs develop, they're breathing in the exhaust from a lot of these diesel trucks, and now they're growing up and they have a host of health problems, and they're very expensive. And we're all meant to think that the reason that they're so sick is, you know, because they just come from an area that just happens. Come on. So here we all are. So this is one of the things that I do appreciate that Greta Thunberg said.
Greta
Thunberg, if you are Swedish.
If you're Swedish.
Okay.
For all our Swedish listeners.
So hello to, yeah, all of our Swedish comrades. Especially Emily von Gilbert.
She's
from the from the Feminist Caucus in DSA. Hopefully I can get some people from the Up Now campaign for universal preschool to come on and talk about that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
If you're listening now, I'm calling you out. Come and talk about your campaign. But I was glad that she brought this up because she was talking about some of the sacrifice zones that are already being offered up to the gods of capitalism, that there are entire populations of, like, particularly island nations, places in the global south along the equator, places that are experiencing terrible droughts, monsoons, just extreme weather conditions that are making them have to flee. And those people are being turned away. And now you get to see that just this week in the Bahamas. People who couldn't stay where they were are being turned away. Because, not because they're black. That's not the story. Of course, that's not the official story. But that's what it looks like to me. Y'all are black.
My opinion.
Right, and our government sadly doesn't really like you very much, and that
Donald
means
Trump
that
said they
you
were
can,
bad people, right?
What do you say? Very bad gangsters and very very bad drug dealers.
Not racially coded at all.
Yeah.
So that's why they can't come, even though they were all prepared. They all had passports, and all you needed to do was approve their visas and let them come in, and it was that simple. And then give them TPS so that they can work and make their own way. But no, that's not what's going to happen to so many of them. They were sent back, and the idea is that you all stay in whatever conditions that we will afford for you to stay in there. The little, whatever little bit of help we give you, you take it with a smile, or you take nothing at all. And that's what the world is being told is what the people of the Bahamas, who just endured a terrible hurricane, are worthy of.
And nobody will profit off of whoever goes in and gives them the help they need.
The NGOs are like licking their chops.
They love it. Disaster capitalism. Naomi Klein.
So Naomi Klein was in conversation with Greta after she was interviewed on Democracy Now. I don't know if it was that day or the next day, but they were
two icons.
They were speaking exactly about
this
question, because Naomi Klein has been in the leadership and has been writing about the fallout of Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico in her book and in her series, The Battle for Paradise. And people should go on, that you should read it, or go on The Intercept. I'll link it in the show notes on kbu.fm. But it's exactly this question of like, okay, not only is it that the people who live in these tropical zones, in this case in the Caribbean, Puerto Rico and Bahamas, and right in the Caribbean, right next to Florida in, in the United States. Not only are they not going to get the help that they need, and people of Puerto Rico did not after Marias, so many of them have left the island. The island is being depopulated. And now the development of the island will go into high effect, and the island will look more like the island of St. Barth's, which is exclusively for the rich. So the battle for paradise is exactly about that. So, you know, one of the most beautiful places in the world is in the Caribbean, and all of the island nations there know it. You know, like, I'm Puerto Rican. Shout out to all of the Caribbean people listening. All right, there's a special thing that we got going on, and you know, people from the Caribbean are warm and will show you a good time, rich in culture, good food, great music. But guess what? Where you're from, you might not even be able to stay.
Well, it's one of the most insidious things.
The hurricane will wash away, foreign capital will come in, invest, and you can't even stay anymore unless you're ready to get on your knees and serve people at a resort.
That's one of the most insidious things, I feel like, about... It's becoming one of the most insidious things about capitalism in the U.S. is, like, I don't know, where I grew up, or, like, how I grew up, where I lived, there were just places where
Beaverton, Oregon.
Beaverton, Oregon. Thank you.
Represent. Hey, Beaverton.
Beaverton, the beef. I don't know. They're just really... there are just places in the Caribbean and in the world where you don't know what they're for, except for going tourism. To for a vacation. They're just beautiful places. And there's, like, not... but, yeah, there's. It's the same kind of, like... It's the same kind of essentialism and, like, historical erasure that happens in the U.S. in terms of indigenous people, where it's just, like, we understand that the Bahamas is home to, like, Rastafarian culture and, like, all of these, like, this beautiful music and, like, black people. And at the same time, we also know that it's just a place that you can go on vacation if you're white.
And consume that culture.
Yeah. And we're seeing, for the first time in my lifetime, that where I've been, like, able to process it in real time, how that actually develops. And it is horrifying. Like, it's genocide. Like, when you have the economic and, like, logistical power to save thousands and hundreds of thousands of people from a disaster, and you instead force them to stay where they are so that you can exploit the disaster that they're living in, and then make money off of the tourism that will come for generations to come. Like, that's a genocide.
Yeah.
That's what happens.
And also, we should be frank about where we're at, right? So we're all activists, all in the DSA, and have been fighting on many fronts. And despite all that, we should be honest about the lack of power that a lot of our movements have, because the level that we should be at and that we need to be at is that people should have been able to spring into effect to say, actually, we are going to take every last person that is coming from the Bahamas or anywhere else in the world that you want, where people get turned away from. We should be in a position to be able to shut down anywhere that is tactical, that will be able to get us what we want, and to say, no, actually, this sector, this area, this place that is up for debate on our terms, we're saying we're not going to go to work here, we're not going to allow business as usual to happen here unless you let in all of the people from the Bahamas or from wherever else. But we're just not there yet, and that's where we need to be able to go to, in my opinion, that's where the struggle has to go.
Yeah,
I think that's what's so exciting about the Green New Deal. When we're talking about climate change, it's going to affect every single human. And so every single human needs to have a say. And the climate change is going to affect people's access to healthcare. It affects immigrants, as we've been talking about. There are climate refugees. There's going to be new opportunities for people to work. And I think that so many different kinds of people can come together and see that they we'll have an we can say what the Green New Deal will look like. It doesn't exist yet, and we're talking about it now, and we're going to be talking about it on the 20th, and we can figure out how to make there be protections for immigrants and for indigenous people and for workers who are going to be affected by the change in what the new world is going to look like. I think it's really exciting.
I mean, it is kind of a meeting point for all of these issues. What I was thinking earlier when you were you two were talking about where do we land when people are concerned about the loss of jobs and dirty energy and that fact that the world is ending. Working class people who like need these jobs are also like being exploited by their capitalist bosses. The same people who are starving them of living wages are the same people who are destroying our planet. And all of these things meet in terms of the degradation of the planet that we're all living on. And so, like, asking or giving people a proper living wage is increasing their quality of life the same way that you would increase somebody's quality of life if you work to save the planet that we're living on and reduce pollution in the air and provide people with a safe place to live. It's like the intention behind who is building the society that we're living in. The people who are building the society that we're living in now don't care about the workers who are working in these jobs that we are trying to eliminate because of destroying the planet. The movements that are trying to save our planet, like, are doing so because they want people to be able to live. And so we behoove them to also think about paying people with proper living wages, thinking about how we're going to house refugees and immigrants. All of these issues meet at the destruction of the planet that all of these oppressed people live on together.
Yeah, this is it's up for grabs. And because the movement is brand new, we get to watch and participate, hopefully, as people start to debate, and hopefully there will be debates, healthy debates about how to go forward, because there are going to be a lot of bad ideas that are going to be put forward. I'm really, really afraid of some of the anti-immigrant rhetoric that sometimes you'll see with people who are looking at some of the internal problems that are coming out of the degradation of our climate, and this idea like, oh, we can't even take care of people who are citizens of the United States as they deal with the fallout of this storm or that storm. How can we take care of others? This is very scary, and I really hope that this movement that is around the youth-led climate strike will be able to say in a united and full-throated way, no, we are not falling for that. We live on a sphere, right? So the borders are set by y'all, and we don't think that they should apply whatsoever when it comes to people who are being affected by the climate catastrophe. So I just think that that's something that people who care about these issues should be sure to keep their eye on, that we have to have solidarity with people that happen to be on the other side of whatever border you want, that we have everything in common with them and nothing in common with the overlords that are trying to convince us all that they don't deserve our help and solidarity.
Borders are drawn by imperialist monsters who are just building mechanisms to create wealth that destroy the planet.
Mic drop.
What did you say?
Again, City Hall, 10:30, September 20th, Friday. Support youth in the climate strike. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator.
This is Olivia Pace, fan of Greta Thunberg.
If you're Swedish.
And this is Caleb Briggs, Portland, DSA.
Thank you. Good luck, y'all.
Hey. Cute.
KBOO proudly co-sponsors the Portland Folk Music Society concert series, featuring artists touring nationally and internationally. Shows start this September with Jim Queskin and Meredith Axelrod. The new season continues with artists Bill Staines, Radim Zenkel, and the Honey Whiskey Trio. Then 2020 kicks off with Kate Lee and Forrest O'Connor, followed by Sam Ryder and the Human Hands, Robin and Linda Williams, Pat Donahue, and Joni Harms. Portland Folk Music Society concerts are presented at the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. For more information, go to the website kboo.fm and click on Community Events.
Hello, KBOO members. Thank you for being a part of our amazing community. Please join us this year at Mic to the People, our annual election meeting. Do you want to help steer KBOO in a positive direction this fall? Plan on attending the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater and make your voice heard. Cast your vote by 1 p.m. at the event and enjoy refreshments and live entertainment with local musicians West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. Hear a report back from your board of directors and get to know this year's candidates. Record your fondest memories of KBOO in a minute or less at the Mic to the People booth. This is an all-ages and disability-affirmative event. Again, that's the annual election meeting, Mic to the People, Saturday, September 14th from noon to 3 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, featuring West Coast Black Bear and Izzy BM. More information can be found at kboo.fm/meeting2019. Remember, your voice matters.